Well, we first saw the Trump bromance with Vladimir Putin in 2013 when the Miss Universe pageant is underway in Moscow. And it was very clear that Trump saw this, the Miss Universe pageant, which he was the owner of with NBC, Trump saw this as a stepping stone for his own ambitions for building doing a real estate deal in Moscow. His partner on the Miss Universe pageant was a oligarch by the name of Aras Agalarov, a billionaire a real estate, Russian real estate developer, who was known as Putin's builder because he had built all sorts of infrastructure for various summits and other projects that the Kremlin wanted. And in fact, Putin had given Agalarov a medal in a Kremlin ceremony just shortly before Trump flies there to Moscow to preside over the pageant. So Trump and Agalarov forged this relationship over the Miss Universe pageant, but the goal was to partner in this Trump Tower Moscow plan that Trump had always been dreaming about for years. And Trump knew that one way to make this happen was to get the blessing of the Kremlin itself. So that's when you first start seeing Trump saying all these flattering things about Vladimir Putin, calling him a great leader, comparing him in a much favorable way to Barack Obama, and also expressing keen interest in meeting with Putin while he was in Moscow. He was desperate to have a meeting with Putin while he was in Moscow.
So then when Trump's political campaign began in earnest, what did you and David Corn uncover discover in terms of how those two things then intersected?
Well, just to complete the story, and because I think this is significant, while he was there in Moscow, he did sign a letter of intent with the Agalarov's company to build that Trump Tower. And this went much further than anybody realized at the time. Donald Trump Jr. was put in charge of the project. Ivanka Trump flew over to Moscow in February 2014 to scout potential sites for the Trump Tower with MN Agalarov, the pop singer's son of Aras Agalarov, a figure who does keep reappearing in this story. And what is happening, though, in February 2014, that is just as Putin is preparing to annex Crimea, intervene in Ukraine, that triggers sanctions by the United States and the EU against Russia and various Russian entities. One of those sanctioned entities was a Russian government-owned bank, Sberbank, that was going to finance the Trump Tower deal. And what happens as a result of these sanctions? The Trump Tower deal collapses. It crumbles. And a major reason appears to have been those sanctions. So what's important about that is this influences Trump's view of sanctions from the get-go. The sanctions are what torpedoed his long cherished dream of building in Russia, of having a Trump Tower in Russia. So if you want to understand at least a part of what shaped Trump's thinking about Russia and Putin's government, it was his experience as a businessman. Obama's sanctions tanked his business deal. He, as president, And he made this clear very quickly, shortly after announcing as president, was going to lift those sanctions. Now, that's one element of the Trump-Russia story. There's much, much more, of course. There was a second effort to build a Trump Tower, Moscow, while Trump was campaigning for president. That involved Michael Cohen, a figure who's gotten a lot of attention lately, overtures to the Kremlin. And at the same time, you have these figures from his experience in that first Trump Tower deal, Emin Agalarov, Aras Agalarov, the publicist got Rob Goldstone, who was with Trump in Moscow. He was the publicist for Emin Agalarov. These are the same characters who set in motion now notorious Trump Tower meeting in New York, in which a delegation of Kremlin-connected Russians file in to meet with the highest levels of the Trump campaign. The Trump campaign officials, Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, Jared Kushner, think they're going to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. In fact, what they were there for was to essentially lobby the Trump campaign to make further steps to lift sanctions on Russia by getting rid of the hated Magnitsky Act, a law that had been passed by Congress to impose blacklisting sanctions on Russian human rights abusers. So it's very clear that the Russians and the Kremlin had an agenda to reach out to cultivate the Trump campaign. There's lots of other examples in Russian roulette, which we walk through, including some eye-popping email correspondence about overtures made by other figures who were close to Putin. And these overtures did get some traction. There's no question about it.
Well, in terms of Donald Trump and his initial interest really coming from the perspective of a businessman, I mean, talk about Rex Tillerson, because his experience then in Russia when he was the chief executive officer of ExxonMobil, I mean, a lot of people were concerned about not just Trump and his campaign, but afterwards other people in the administration and their ties.
Sure. And not just Tillerson. I mean, Michael Flynn, who became Trump's, you know, chief national security advisor, a guy who had the former chief of the Defense Intelligence Agency, who flew over to Moscow in December 2015, was paid $45,000 to attend a dinner celebrating the 10th anniversary of RT, the Russian state-sponsored propaganda network. Flynn ends up sitting right next to Vladimir Putin at the gala dinner the night he was there. Carter Page, a member of the Trump Foreign Policy Board, who flies over to Moscow in July of 2016 and meets with Russian officials, lawmakers, and businessmen, and sends insights about that he wants to pass along to the Trump campaign. George Papadopoulos, another foreign policy advisor who is meeting with Kremlin-connected front folks in London, trying to set up a summit between Trump and Putin. So there were a lot of avenues. And of course, Paul Manafort going to trial in just a few weeks, a guy who had been collecting millions of dollars to be the consultant to the pro-Russian political party in Ukraine, whose top assistant there was a guy the FBI considered a Russian military intelligence asset. And Manafort himself had these extensive financial dealings with Oleg Deripaska, another billionaire oligarch close to Putin, who the FBI had long suspected of having organized crime ties. So there was a lot going on during that Trump campaign, a lot of meetings and ties of senior individuals with some very strange characters in the Kremlin.
In terms of the investigation that's happening right now, what is your sense about what Robert Mueller is uncovering here? And we'll talk about the indictments in a moment, but just your sense of how the investigation is going.
Well, it's already produced some major indictments and guilty pleas. The Manafort trial is coming up, but I think there's an expectation that Mueller will probably be doing something very shortly. He's been at this for a while. First up on his plate is clearly the obstruction of justice part of his investigation into the firing of Jim Comey as director of the FBI. Mueller had been pressing for quite some time for an interview with the president. The president's lawyers seemed to be resisting that at all costs. And the consensus is that Mueller will not want to wait and to do anything after Labor Day, because then he could be accused, if he does anything during the election campaign himself, that he will have been interfering in the congressional elections in the same way that Jim Comey did in 2016. And so we could be seeing an hearing from Mueller sometime in the next couple of months.
What is your reaction to there is a lot of chatter that people are saying that the Russian collusion issue is a distraction. And this is coming from all sides. Trump himself and the far right saying the FBI is distracted, and they blamed the Russian investigation for the FBI missing signs ahead of the Parkland shooting. Then you have progressives and Bernie Sanders saying it's a distraction from what's really happening in the US and from the poverty people are experiencing and the complete dismantling of the everything in the US government, from all the regulatory agencies to, you know, all the institutions. I mean, how do we view this?
Certainly those are all the serious matters, and paying attention to this, to Russia and the Mueller investigation, doesn't in any way take away from the significance of all these other issues about how the Trump administration is governing the country. All legitimate issues. But look, this investigation has been going on for some time. It has, in everybody's view, cast a cloud over Trump's White House, over his election, over Trump himself. And the public at this point deserves a full accounting of what happened. And Mueller has been, he is a superb investigator. He was the former director of the FBI. He's a guy that demands results, wants to get to the bottom of things. And I think we will never be able to close the book on the events of 2016 until we get a full report and a full accounting of what Mueller has been able to find in his investigation.
And what do you think are the long-term implications for our democracy of all of this?
Well, look, I mean, taking a step back, regardless of what the findings are on collusion, which is the buzzword that the president continually uses and denies there was anything of the kind. There was a very serious Russian attempt to interfere in our election. It included cyber attacks, it included social media manipulation, it included propaganda by RT and Sputnik, and it included various overtures to players in the Trump campaign. That is serious business. I mean, it is black letter law in this country that foreign individuals, much less foreign governments, cannot give money to a political candidate in the United States under the very sound operating premise that American elections should be decided by American citizens without interference from anybody who lives in another country. What happened in 2016 was an unprecedented full-scale assault on that premise, with a rather extensive Russian government attempt to influence the election. That is, would seem on its face to be something that all Americans should be quite concerned about. And if we don't get to the bottom of what happened then and figure out ways to stop it, there's nothing to stop the Russians or other foreign adversaries, whether it be China, Iran, North Korea, you name it, from trying to do the same thing in this year's election and the next presidential elections.
Now, this upcoming summit between Trump and Putin, scheduled to happen, I believe, in Helsinki, July 16th, we already have senior officials from the US meeting with senior Russian officials saying that, oh yeah, we're talking about what happened with the elections. I mean, what are your thoughts on those meetings and what could potentially come out of this summit?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because here we are. Just even though there has now been a unanimous conclusion from everybody that has examined the intelligence about Russia's role in the election, that this was indeed exactly what the intelligence community said in January 2017, a multifaceted influence campaign ordered by Vladimir Putin to mess with our election. The Senate Intelligence Committee just this week in a bipartisan report endorsed that conclusion, saying it was a fully sound report by the intelligence community that was backed up by extensive sourcing. And yet, what did we have the president do just the other day? Once again, seemed to raise questions about it, seemed to say that there is no consensus. Russia continues, he tweeted just last week, Russia continues to say it had nothing to do with meddling in our election, exclamation point, as though he accepts the Russian denial. Basically, the president is the one outlier on this issue, since every official of his own government, every official in the intelligence community, every leader in the law enforcement community has all endorsed a conclusion that our president rejects. And so here he is going to this summit with this cloud about hanging over it about Russia's role in the election, and the guy who is conducting the foreign policy for the United States, the man meeting with Putin, doesn't accept it.
Final thoughts,
okay.
Michael Isikoff.
I do think there is a lot here in our book people have gleaned. You know, it's got a lot of fresh reporting. And also, I should point out that while clearly Trump is the focus, we do in this book go quite a bit into how the Obama administration handled this. And there's lots of questions about, you know, how they failed to aggressively respond to Russia's attack during the time it was taking place, how the Hillary Clinton campaign handled this. We take a close look at the Russia reset policy under President Obama that did not fare so well, especially in retrospect. So I think there's a lot for all sides in our book, and that's I'm really grateful that even those who don't necessarily agree with everything we have in the book have said and continues to say they learned a lot, and it's a book that tries to put all of this in perspective.
And in terms of what's playing out now with Mueller investigation, how can people digest all of this? Like, what are the main things that you think people should be paying attention to in the coming weeks and months?
I think people should really be paying close attention, certainly to what happens in the summit, how Trump handles that, what does Putin get out of it, and then also we do need to do to be watching very closely what Robert Mueller may have in store for us very, very shortly.